Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It is our pleasure to be joined by Charles Davis from Fox. If it sounds super familiar, the sound of his voice or the look of his face, if you're a Chiefs fan and you were not paying and you were paying any attention last week, you will know that Charles did the game with Kevin Burkhardt. That's a great team. They don't give those baseball guys much time off, I'll tell you that. They got to go right back to work. But Kevin is a real pro, and he's got one alongside him in you.
You're awfully kind. I appreciate it. And let me tell you something. I didn't allow him to have any time off, okay? I told him straight up, like, look, you just got to bite the bullet, do the World Series, do what you're supposed to do, but you don't get that next week to rest and decompress and all that. You can do that later on. You do that postseason. I need you back. I need you desperately, and I'll do whatever it takes, including, you know, showing up on your doorstep. Got to have Kevin Burkhardt. That is the man.
That being said, making Joe Buck do Thursday night football after the seventh game of the World Series, that to me is a little bit extreme. I mean, come on. Give somebody else
now,
the
Charles,
gig.
He did you say making him? I think it's getting
Listen,
to.
Have you seen Joe's contract?
Right. I'm sure he's happy.
You get out there and get to work, Joe. No, we're just teasing.
The per game, yeah.
How that follows, right? Plus, when you know it's a short stint, right, you know it's a short amount of time or it's a one-time deal, at the end of the day, you're kind of proud when it's all said and done, right?
Right.
I did Game 7 of the World Series. The next night, I was right back on football, and I didn't miss a beat. And, Joe, you remember a few years ago, Joe did a World Series game that night, but in the afternoon, he did a 49ers NFL game. That's when the Giants were in the World Series, I believe.
Yeah.
So you know, it was one of those deals where, you know, you just make it work, make it happen. And I think there is a little bit of pride that goes into it for all of us. I mean, the three of us talking now. Could you imagine if we had that chance to run a double or a triple like that and accomplish something most people don't get a chance to? I think we would take the opportunity and do it.
You mentioned that was during the World Series where the Giants were in it, which sent groans all over Kansas City and the Midwest, because Joe wasn't a particular favorite during that World Series because Madison.
Well, it didn't have to be that World Series, though, Danny, because the Giants were playing every other year. Remember,
right,
they're in
right.
a sequence. So.
But I think it was then.
Okay.
But my point is that as you're doing games on a national platform, and generally what happens to anybody who does games on a national platform is that each team's fan base thinks you're screwing them. I mean, it's
no
silly.
Doubt.
But
do you find that, Charles? Or do you experience that?
I found that college football, NFL football, doesn't really matter. You know, fan bases are so passionate, and they care about their teams, and you hear what you hear. You know what I mean? And I can tell you, and you can tell people, when you're doing a game, you know, and if you don't have a team that you're doing it for, like, you know, if you're doing it for Kansas State, that's one thing. You want to try and be fair to the other team. Well, the emphasis is on Kansas State. I mean, that's just how it is, right?
Right.
You know, how did they do? How did that go? Are you going to be fair? Of course you are. You're going to treat the other team with respect, and that's the way it's supposed to be. But when you're doing it nationally, your goal is to tell what you think is the picture in front of you. And it does not matter. I can go to the airport nowadays. Even now, I can go to the airport, and I promise you, within 100 feet of each other, I will have fans from both teams tell me that I was biased against their team. I'm not saying it happens every week, because it doesn't. But it does. It happens. You know, the old joke is, well, I guess I hit it down the middle. They both think I like the other team. But it also is just in real time, in real passion, it is really difficult for fans. And that's why I finally learned on social media, I don't look at my social media after a game until probably Wednesday.
Right.
Because you get so many things in real time that come at you that it is something. And I'll leave it at this. I did a Baylor-Texas A&M game years ago. And down the stretch, Texas A&M, down a few points on the scoreboard, they take it on, like, let's just call it a 12-play drive, okay? I think they ran it 11 times, threw it once, and stuck it right down their throats, put it in the end zone, and won the ball game. And back then, I was opening my phone after the game. Hey, let's you know, oh, their social media. Oh. And this guy, in real time, was destroying me. You're so biased. You hate Baylor. Say something nice about Baylor. Now, remember, this is in the midst of a 12-play drive that A&M is jamming it down their throat. How come you're so biased for A&M? How come you don't want to give Baylor any credit? Credit? They're sticking it down their throat. What credit is there to give? And this is the best part. It finishes. You're the worst announcer. You are so biased. I will never listen to another game you do. If you look at my timeline, probably 5 minutes later in the timeline, the same guy comes back and goes, hey, just want to let you know I just love Baylor so much. It just killed me to see him lose. You're really good at what you do, man. Keep doing your thing.
That's cool.
Well, I'm glad there was some of that positiveness, because you could be walking down in the airport and see fans from both sides, and they both could say, hey, you did a great job, and it could be equally fair as well. Why is it always
it could be, but you know how life is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Isn't it amazing that we look at the negative? Like, not all the calls that went our way, the official calls that burned us, and the announcers who didn't give us respect, and it's amazing. We're talking to Charles Davis, and right now such a featured analyst in the NFL on Fox, but has done a lot of college football, and in fact was a regular on Big 12 games for a long, long time. But we talk about doing a lot when we talk about a guy like Joe Buck, but you also are all over the place, and one of the things that you're heavily involved with is this new phenomenon of breaking the draft down. I mean, all kinds of slicing and dicing with that thing, and you probably have to have your mock draft ready to be on TV here pretty soon. And I mean, you become a – I know you're a football guy, played at Tennessee and all of that, but they've made you into this – you got to do it. I mean, it's great to be involved, but they make you a draft Nick, an expert. I mean, so tell me how you follow the college game, because you got NFL games to do. You don't get to do as many college games, but it is right there in your face because you're evaluating players who are going to be future draft picks. So how do you follow the college game now?
You know, Saturdays on an NFL site, if you are able to get most of your work done or all of your work done by a certain amount of time, then you've got a lot of the day available to watch college football. So you're not watching it totally as a draft pick during that time, but you're getting a sense of who's good, right? You hear certain names over and over, right? You know what the teams are, and you see the rankings. And I follow it pretty darn well. It's not like I just check out on it and come back in January. But I will tell you with the best of intentions, and other people will tell you whatever they want to tell you guys, okay? I'm just going to tell you how I do it. I follow the game. I know the storylines. I know the big games each week. I know a decent amount of players. But at the same time, my pro assignment is going to come first. My NFL life is going to come first. So if you can relate it this way and remember college, for all of those who weren't the best students in the world, who did everything diligently, read the syllabus, knew all the target dates, right, read all the additional reading and all that, and did what I did, which was, oh, God, is that midterm next week? And you cram, because that's what ends up happening. Come January, when I can give my full attention back to the college game, I have access to all the tape, I have access to all the stuff, and I know these things, and of course I'm talking to different people, and you quickly narrow down, okay, here are the top 500 players or so in the country, and then you go to work on it. And then guys will pop up along the way that you've never heard of, you do your work on them as well, and you hope that you've done justice to all of them. You know, we all know people who will tell you, I've seen every throw that kid made since the third grade.
Totally bogus.
Some of them, that's true. Vast majority, not likely.
No, okay? I'm not.
So that's just kind of how it works. There are, in our business, there are a few guys that I would tell you, if they told you something, I would bank it. And other guys, look, we're all just trying to keep our head above water. We're all just working hard. I think I work as hard as anyone. But the idea that I'm watching a ton of tape during my NFL season, I try. I make the best of intentions. I would just tell you straight up, that's really not true.
Well, I'm not trying to expose you at all. I'm just saying this is a good excuse why you're on College Football Game Day today. I mean, even though you're doing a Chiefs game, you know, you're just a great guy. You do follow football, and you're heavily interested in football. I want you to know it was my excuse. I'm not calling you out. You do a great job. I'm saying we're ready to talk some college football with you, and you are legitimate even though – you're doing the NFL game as well.
But he also appreciates our audience enough to be straight up honest about how he goes about his work.
You're a great guy, Charles, and I appreciate all your work. But we do want to focus in on your following of the college game.
I wanted to get your opinion on, you know, and you can just put it in a little ball because it's obviously still an extremely hot topic. Right now, the NCAA has decided to take, at least dip their toes in the water of player compensation for likeness.
Yeah.
I'll just say this. I'm not a fan of it. I think with the cost of college now and the way that players are treated, I think it's wonderful. And we're talking, I'll give my opinion here in the elevator speech in, we're talking about generally more basketball than football, and we're talking about such a tiny percentage of players, especially in basketball, and those players will be getting paid in months from when they're playing college basketball. I think this is driven by big media markets that don't care about college sports, and their whole focus is on professional sports. There's my elevator speech. What's your thought as somebody who's around the college and pro sports scene for years and years now and was a college athlete as well?
Yeah, I was lucky enough to come up, and the college experience for me was tremendous because there was no real talk about, you know, compensation, all these other things. The compensation was I was fortunate enough to be on scholarship. So your compensation was you're on scholarship, you're not paying for college that way. You're paying for it by your athletic ability, your commitment to your team, your practices, all those other things. And your payoff was down the road. If you got a college degree, whether you were an NFL player, in my case because it's football, or you were just a normal guy like me, now you can take your college experience, your college degree that you should have gotten, and parlay that into a life. That was all that was – there wasn't any real discussion about the rest of it, right? All this where we are now, I was fortunate enough that it paid off for me that way. I was fortunate enough that I was raised in a position to do that. My father was a high school teacher and coach. My mom, you know, she had jobs and everything. She worked at a daycare facility and all. We weren't, you know, rich by any stretch, but I don't believe we were ever poor. You know, we were true middle class people. And I never forget my dad telling me, he said, "Look here, man." He said, "Number one, you're not good enough that this is going to happen." He said, "But just in case, I want you to know this straight up." He said, "If someone offers you something, you come back and let me know, okay? Because if I can't get it for you, you don't need to have it, because that person is giving you something." He said, "One day they're going to want it back from you. And I will guarantee you, as sure as I'm standing here, they will ask for it at a time that you can't provide it back to them. So don't be in someone's pocket. Don't be beholden to someone." But he finished it with, and remember what I said? "You're really not good enough that that's going to happen, but I'm just letting you know just in case." And he was right. You know, I was no Herschel Walker. I was no, you know, Bo Jackson. People aren't paying money for me to come. But in my long-winded way of answering this, we are at a time now where I think what you said is really apropos. We're in a different driven era. We have other people with other agendas that are going on, and we may very well be confronting this, although I think it's still a little farther down the road. They said that they're going to do this, but I don't think it gets enacted right away.
Right.
And then we have the unintended consequences.
Yes.
And that's the thing people keep missing. The unintended, everybody thinks that 18 to 22-year-olds handle things pretty well. It's tough enough in an NFL locker room when the guy gets the new contract. Everybody says they're happy for him. They're calling their agent wondering where theirs is. Now, make that 18 to 22-year-olds where the quarterback is getting the compensation because of his likeness and it's everywhere, and you can't find your jersey anywhere, so you're getting nothing.
I got a few points.
That's going to be an interesting thing that goes on, and see how these locker rooms, these coaches, the schools, everyone handles it. I'm just glad I don't have to deal with it at this point. I was lucky enough to play where you played, and then it was over, you left. And hopefully you did the right things and got a degree and put it to good use. And I was lucky enough to get two.
Well, it's interesting here. There's a lot of aspects of this, and you guys spoke about a couple of them. Unintended consequences is the biggest, obviously, and how the locker room works and all that. But, A, these guys have a choice if they want to be involved in a system or not. Okay, they don't have to play college football. They choose to take on what is there. The other thing is, like, think about Zion Williamson. He is the poster boy of the value that he brought to Duke with his jersey and, you know, the headlines on ESPN every day about what he's doing, like he's LeBron James. But I'll point this out to you. I will bet anybody a lot of money that if Williamson did never play for Duke, the ratings wouldn't have been different for any of the Duke games. The college uniform runs out there. other players fit in. We don't pay extra to watch our college teams because Herschel Walker's out there. Georgia has other good players. As long as they play well, people are going to pay. So that's the other thing. We're overvaluing what these guys are. And then the guys who are getting on scholarships, you're going to do this. Okay, if Williamson's worth millions, are you going to pay him $40,000 a year and feel good about it? No, you're never going to catch the gap. So, you know, you need to do a salary cap and say the guy who's the 85 scholarship limit, you get 10 cents and you pay
Here's
for school pool. Because, you know, the starting quarterback is worth all the money in the salary cap. So if you want to make it the pros, you can. And any unintended consequences, Charles, I just look, Nike's the easiest example, right? Phil Knight, Oregon. Why doesn't he go out and just pay 130 guys $50,000 a year each and say, I'm going to use your likeness for Nike, even though he doesn't use it? And they have just bought way past the scholarship limit. And you're just going to – I heard a real college coach in a minor sport say, if this comes through, I just got to go find my boosters. They said that already. They got to go find their booster who's interested in their sport, who's willing to fund for the likeness, you know, to put on their little car ad or whatever. Yep. It's worth nothing, but the money will flow to the kid. They're not talking about real market value like, hey, a guy might get $4,000 or two, Danny, to do an ad.
Right.
So Charles, the unintended consequences are crazy.
The unintended consequences are crazy. And I still think the adage that college sports are really coach-driven and NFL and NBA and professional sports are player-driven, it's not 100%, but it does skew that way. Because to your point, Dan, when you turn on a Duke game, you're turning on Coach K in Duke. You know, you're not just turning on
right.
Duke. You turn on Coach K in Duke.
I still watch
and
Duke now. Doesn't matter who was a player last year.
And whoever comes running through there, as long as Coach K's there, it's still Coach K and Duke. All right? So when you start putting all that together and you're dominated that way, and you know how it is when we call a game, and let's see what Coach Snyder dialed up here, right? You know, that sort of a deal. In the NFL, not quite to the same extent. We still have a few of those coaches that are recognizable that way. We kind of cater that way. But for the most part, it's more of a player-driven deal. And that's going to be, you know, the difference going forward. In a lot of ways, I'm glad I'm not in college athletics anymore because I can just watch it from a distance and see how it all goes. I don't have to deal with it, and I just think these administrators and other people. And look, here's the other thing. If you are the booster who's responsible for the success of that program with your pocketbook, at some point you're going to want to see results, right? At some point you're going to want to see success. Phil Knight didn't go all in with Oregon. And he wouldn't still be all in with Oregon if that money translated to 10 straight years of below 500 football.
Right. You see, Oklahoma State, the late Boone Pickens, did so much, and he's unhappy with the 10-win seasons and the 9-win seasons with Mike Gundy. They don't necessarily they aren't warm buddies to go out to dinner every night.
Yeah. Hey. He had a tough time during that time frame. So we'll just have to see how it all plays out. And hopefully it plays out for the better for the student-athletes that are playing because that's what I care about most of all, to see them. And look, as I said, I was lucky enough to get 2 degrees. I want everybody to get their degree and have a chance of success at life and have what we did on the ball field, on the hardwood, whatever, parlay into that for us. That's what I'm looking
for. That's well said, because I'll say this. I don't mind the players getting money. I have nothing against them getting any amount of money. I'm just talking about the fair balance of the competition, which is great. And let's bring it back for those who don't want to listen to issues. We got Charles Davis, and you might be that big booster. He may be the guy, Danny, right here to fund Tennessee's resurgence because he's a Tennessee player, and we talk about watching college football. Now, hey, Charles, Mizzou right here, a lot of people focus in on Missouri. We do every week, KU, K-State, Missouri. We never miss out talking a lot about them on our show here on Saturday. In the East, Tennessee's going to be coming to Missouri in a couple of weeks, a week or so. And, man, is that a big game, because Tennessee's been a disappointment compared to where they historically want to be. But they're still – where are they this year? Because Missouri's a little disappointed for where they want to be this year. And I look at that game next – in a couple of weeks. I guess they got Georgia, Florida, and then Tennessee.
Right.
It is 2 weeks from today. That is the big game that I see on Missouri's schedule. I'm sure it's a big one for Tennessee. What do you think about Mizzou versus Tennessee, that game, where they are, those type of things in the SEC?
Yeah, I think it's a mammoth game for both programs for these reasons. Let's start with Mizzou. As you said, starting the season, you guys know they were – trendy's the wrong word. They were a solid pick to be a team on the rise in the SEC East. get the quarterback transfer in Kelly Bryant. The way they finished up things last year, guys coming back, you know, new facilities, Coach Odom totally settled in there, the whole deal. And then they open up the season with a thud with Wyoming, right? Tennessee was also picked to be a team on the rise, not to the extent of Missouri. But, hey, this is a team that should be getting better. And Tennessee starts with forget a thud. How about cratering against Georgia State? Okay, so when you start that way, but then Missouri seemed to get right. You know, and they played better going through and what have you. Here's the bottom line. These programs have a few issues with each other, too, because as a Tennessee alum, I wasn't exactly crazy about hearing about us trying to poach players when the probation was handed down, right, the NCAA regulation.
Yeah, Barry Odom said that you guys are contacting the players this summer.
Yeah, that felt very unseemly to me.
It wasn't Charles Davis, though. It wasn't the big booster.
No. But you remember when Penn State went through theirs and all of a sudden coaches were flying and they were sitting on campus talking to kids. Nothing ever felt right about that. Nothing felt right about this. Okay, so they had their issues with each other, and you get it. Last year they were playing a close game, and then Missouri elevated. And, you know, I'd never forget, I tell this story. I actually went and took a shower. I think the score was like 17-17 or 17-10 or whatever. I come out, it's 40-17 Missouri. Like, what did that, how long was I in the shower? So they are peers with each other right now. Tennessee had been a blue blood in the SEC East. It used to be Tennessee, Florida, Georgia. Pick your order. One of them was going to win the East. Missouri shows up, wins the East, what, back-to-back years, plays for championships in the SEC, and they fell off a little bit, and they're trying to make their way back, and it looks like they're headed there. But the measuring stick now for those teams trying to get up to where Georgia and Florida are is you've got to deal with Missouri, Kentucky, South Carolina, Tennessee, Vanderbilt. Who's going to come out of that pack? That's why it's such a big game coming up in a couple of weeks, because Tennessee feels like they're playing better now. They've won the last, what, three in a row? They feel like they're getting there. But until they beat Missouri, until they beat Kentucky, until they beat Vandy on a consistent basis, there's no need to talk about getting back to Florida and Georgia. And Missouri feels the same way about where they are. They've got to start beating those teams just like Tennessee, like Kentucky, like Vandy. They've got to do that with consistency, then they can start challenging Florida and Georgia again.
Well, this is probably a whole show, but your alma mater, Tennessee, is the example of when people talk about blue bloods and things that you're only a couple bad hires away from heading into a fallow period.
We're in a 10-year deal.
Right.
And think about it now.
And that must not – this is sort of like a slightly latter-day version of Nebraska. I mean, because you're a fan base that is used to elite. And now, and so, sure, it makes it a tough job. Getting to 7 or 8 wins in a bowl game just isn't cool. What do you think? What's the whole aspect of the fandom there and the difficulty of that job being that you're only a decade removed from being a blue blood, really?
Yeah, and it's really difficult on our fan base because they've been what I would call remarkably patient in so many ways. They're just looking for a sign that says we're back. And the big deal is consistency. And part of what you have to go through is you better know that when you think that you've got the right person, even if there's a struggle going on, I think it behooves you in today's ball is to find a way to hold on to them and go on. Look, Coach K is maybe the most extreme example. Remember the boosters at Duke wanted to fire him, and Tom Butters, the AD, knew he had the right person, and instead, at that time frame, gave him a 10-year deal. Now, Tom Butters couldn't do that nowadays to save his life. There's too many other factors that go into it. But then the AD was still paramount, and he gave him a 10-year deal, and boy, did that pay off, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you feel like you've got that right person, you've got to give them that opportunity because too many things have gone into why you've been bad for a while. I think you mentioned Nebraska. I know they feel like Scott Frost is the right guy. Okay, so while they continue to struggle, they're not going to turn their back, and there's not going to be this. Okay, we'll evaluate our coach at the end. No, they know they've got the right guy. They're going to double and triple down until it's absolutely proven he is not. And I think Nebraska is going to reap the benefits down the road. Tennessee, if they believe Jeremy Pruitt is that guy, they're going to try and do the same thing with Phil Fulmer as the athletic director. Missouri, with Barry Odom, trying to do the same thing because you've got to have consistency. We haven't had it. Think about it. Phil Fulmer loses his job. We go Lane Kiffin, what, one season?
Mm-hmm.
Then we go Derek Dooley. That didn't work out by any stretch of the imagination during that time frame. And he tried his butt off, I will tell you this. I know Coach Dooley. He worked hard to try and make that thing work. It just didn't work for whatever reason, right? Then you go on from there, and who do we end up hiring? Butch Jones?
Yep.
We thought we had turned it. We were right there in a position to win the SEC East in 15 and 16. Didn't happen. Roof caved in 17. Hello, Jeremy Pruitt. No consistency in our head coaching job.
And Derek Dooley's the offensive coordinator at Mizzou the world turns. Last question for you, Charles, because we could talk to you all day. Okay, we can talk about these coaches, and they might be the right answer, but I tell you one bad, bad dude in a sport where the head coach matters a ton, in my opinion, Urban Meyer. He's back on Fox doing television. Mm-hmm. Do you think he'll dip back into college? I know Florida State's already saying, what happens if we bring him in? No matter where he goes, I'll throw another name out, a guy we had on the show two weeks ago.
Bob Stoops.
Mr. Bob Stoops. Will he be in play?
Yep.
Just your Urban Meyer and Bob Stoops, if they walk into your program, they're winning 8 games next year.
I mean, it's just guaranteed.
And then probably 10. So there are some guys who you don't have to stick with and wait around and be patient.
No,
there are some guys that are magical. And there are two of them hanging out there. Bob Stoops going back to a little XFL. And but Urban Meyer's there. What do you think? Do you think Urban Meyer will step back in and coach college football again? Is he possibly on the market?
He's on the market, in my humble opinion. I haven't talked with him, and I'm just stating this as one person who has observed over time. I'd be stunned if he doesn't come back and coach college football, whether it's this year or next year. I think he'll be back at some point in the game coaching it. Bob Stoops, that's an interesting one because – I don't know that anyone saw that one coming when it did. You know, he was 54 at the time he got out. And the idea that he got out and has stayed out for a few seasons already is probably surprised all of us to begin with. As you mentioned, dipping his toe in the XFL, will that be enough to satisfy him? Well, we'll see. Can you be a halfway coach, or will he want to be fully body immersed? If so, people will continue to come after him until that time. Right now, if I handicapped it, I would say Meyer would be back before Stoops. But it wouldn't be surprising if both are back at some point. But I would see Meyer before Stoops coming back.
So, how about Lincoln Riley to the NFL and Bob Stoops back to Oklahoma?
Listen, he wouldn't even have to move from that mansion.
Oklahoma
would be fully okay with that. But it wouldn't shock me if the move that Bob Stoops would make to come back would be to the NFL himself.
Please, Dallas Cowboys are my team, along with
the
Chiefs.
That might be the one. You know, that might be the one. Because, what's the other mountain for these guys to conquer? Look, Urban Meyer's already said it. Dallas Cowboys, of course. And he forgot that there's actually a coach in position already in the job. And he was like, of course I'd take that job. I was like, oh, man, remember, Jason Garrett's still there. But, yeah, the NFL might be the itch both of them might want to scratch, if indeed they want to come back. But I would be surprised if Meyer's not back in college football before he does anything else.
Well, just to give you this little bit of information for people who listen to this show, Bob Stoops, I asked him if he was, you know, sort of getting over the withdrawal of leaving coaching, and he said unequivocally no. He said, the first year I was absolutely miserable. The second year I was pretty miserable. And he said, and now I'm still miserable. Just a little slightly lesser version of miserable.
Can't hit that many golf balls to fill that void when you're used to running a program like those guys.
No doubt.
It's just hard to do.
Yeah, it's such an adrenaline flow to have all that around and the players. It's just awesome. Football's awesome. Charles, it's great talking to you today, too. And Chiefs going to win a Super Bowl?
They've got a very good chance of winning the Super Bowl if they play defense like they did against Minnesota last Sunday. Because then you get Mahomes back, and that changes everything. I mean, you know, look, Patrick Mahomes, you remember Maguire-Sosa home run deal when we all went to the stadium early to watch batting practice? You guys know people get to the stadium early just to watch Patrick Mahomes throw. He is a flat-out rock star.
Yep.
And he plays to that level as well. Kansas City can beat anyone when he's on the field. Not that Matt Moore has done a bad job. He's done an excellent job. But Patrick Mahomes gives you that chance to get over against anyone. If that defense continues to improve and getting Chris Jones back across the front is huge, just give yourself a chance. Then Kansas City can play with anyone. I don't count them out of winning the Super Bowl.
Charles, we really appreciate the time, and we'll look forward to your work on Fox each and every week. And then when NFL draft time comes around, we'll know that you have crammed.
You know the story. I told you straight up the truth. I will cram like crazy, but I feel like it comes through okay. It's great to talk with you guys. And please, I've never met Coach Klieman before, but I've been a big fan for years from the outside. And what he's doing at K-State this year and how they're playing, it's a blast to watch. I actually saw about three quarters of the Oklahoma game. I had a good afternoon to watch that. And it's just fun to watch and see how they're doing. And, you know, I've always enjoyed going to Manhattan. You guys know that.
Yeah. Well, I look forward to seeing you around and introducing the two of you sometime, Charles. Appreciate you having you on
it.
And miss you on the Big 12 trail because I don't see you there. But I appreciate you taking the time and speaking to us. It's awesome. We'll catch you once a year if we can.
I look forward to it. Thanks a lot, guys. I appreciate you having me on.
All
you
right.
Take care and give my best to everyone back there, okay?
All right.
Have a big Saturday.
Charles Davis from Fox Network, now doing the NFL, but still heavily immersed in college football. He's joining us and did join us on college football. Coming down the home stretch on College Football Game Day, Stan Weber down in Austin, Texas. He's got the call on the K-State Network of the 2:30 matchup between Texas and Kansas State. I'm Danny Klinkscale. In addition to hearing me here on Sports Radio 810 WHB a couple times a week, you can catch me all the time at DannyKlinkscale.com in the reasonably irreverent commentary with such things as today's or yesterday's, but it's still up today. Kansas City profile of Kendall Gammon, the Chiefs' former long snapper and now color analyst. He has a great and interesting story of a varied and interesting life, and that's just one of the things that you get at DannyKlinkscale.com, reasonably irreverent commentary. But here you get great college football and great college football analysis, and really we have two keynote games today in college football, Stan, on the national level, and one starts up here in just a few minutes as Penn State goes to Minnesota. The Fighting P.J. Flecks are undefeated, but they're a touchdown underdog to Penn State. Kind of understandable. He's creating a culture there. He's creating a program, but they really haven't played anybody yet. They probably have the softest Big 10 schedule you'll ever see throughout the whole season. They play neither Ohio State nor Michigan this year, for instance. But they do play Penn State today, and Penn State has been solid. And we talked about defense, and they have been rock solid on defense. Interesting ball game.
Yeah, Minnesota started off slowly this year, and they've built their momentum. And we know about monitoring the Nebraska program and talking about how in the middle of the year Scott Frost was getting things moving in the right direction, and it looked like, yeah, we'll go back to a bowl game. But the loss that they took to Minnesota was really damaging and showed a lot of separation. So I think that was a big confidence boost for Minnesota, and they played at a higher level. So if you just look at their tape of their last three games, you can understand why they might be undefeated. You may understand why they may have the same kind of glowing analysis with their football program that I gave Baylor earlier today. Now, Baylor's one of those teams, along with Minnesota, that doesn't get a lot of respect, even though they're undefeated. But it's hard to win games in college football, and they were able to get it done in close games and really unimpressive games at the beginning of the year. And now, like I said, they played a lot better. The College Football Playoff Committee has taken into account all they've done all year long, and they have decided to rank them behind K-State, for instance. Just to give you a little bit of feel
right
about Minnesota being able to play that disrespect card, Danny, K-State's 16, Minnesota's 17 in that College Football Playoff. So, and I think it's deserving, but they're at home, they're a lot of momentum, and we talked about how K-State's a transformed football team. Doesn't mean that they're going to win every game and everything's going to be perfect, but they're completely different than they were 3 years ago, three games ago. And I think we could say the same thing about Minnesota. But they're going to get Penn State, and Penn State's been given a lot of respect. The College Football Playoff Committee ranks them number four, and I don't really think Penn State's played a lot of teams. We can say that about Alabama, Clemson, and now Penn State. So this will look good on the resume. I expect this to be kind of a closer game because Penn State's on the road. I don't think they're a dominant thing. And, you know, Danny, you do a lot of golf tournaments, and you're out there, and people, you know, pay good money for charities and go out and play a scramble, and there are different flights, right? There's
right.
The best players go on the first flight, and then there's a second flight, and sometimes there's even a third, right?
Mm-hmm.
But how many times have you heard guys say, hey, we won our flight? You know, we were the best of the second flight. We couldn't play with those guys that were birdieing every hole, but we played pretty good today. I look at this as that type of game. Even though Penn State is ranked fourth in the country by the College Football Playoff, even though it is hard to win games, and anybody who's undefeated deserves a ton of respect, I don't think, Danny, these two teams are in the same league at all with the Clemson and the Alabamas, who also haven't really played anybody. So the winner can keep their head above water and keep talking about why not us with the big boys. But if you get a chance to see the game, Danny, and see the football being played, it's going to be fun to watch. It's very competitive. Teams are playing with confidence, but I just don't think that they are executing at the same level. So, B-Flight, this is the best of the B-Flight, the way I look at it, unless Penn State surprises me. I want to watch Penn State today, but right now I do not think they're the fourth-best team in the country.
Just a couple minutes left. Big game of the day is LSU and Alabama. It's been talked about so much, we probably don't need to analyze it that much, but LSU's a different team with Joe Burrow, but they have been a poor stepchild in this series. They've lost eight straight games. Alabama, obviously, as we've talked about all day, unproven against a certain competition, but you can only beat who you play. So this game's always big, and extra big today, later in the season.
Yeah, it was a giant game not long ago. Hopefully that was 8 years ago when they were playing, and they're both top of the country. Maybe they are again right now, each of them ranked number one. LSU's changed their style. I think they have a chance with their quarterback to get some things done. But, heck, Nick Saban's lost four times at Alabama at home ever. So the question for me is Tua. You know, how is he going to play? How healthy is he? Nick Saban says he's feeling very well in practice and as a go. But he's also been out a little bit. I think this game comes down to Tua. If he plays his normal game and Alabama looks like themselves of this year, I'm not saying last year, Danny, just this year's version of Alabama, I think they'll be able to get it done at home. But if they slip up at all, Tua's off his game a little bit, or if this Alabama team is not in the same league, if we find out they're just not as good with that changeover and all those freshmen on defense, then LSU is good enough to win. They have offense, and LSU is legit. Love the way they play.
Assess Joe Burrow for me. We know about Tua, and we know that he's electric when he's fully healthy. Joe Burrow has taken a giant step forward this year with the new emphasis on throwing the ball a little bit more with him, and he's looked great. He's already set the single-season touchdown record at LSU, although it wasn't particularly high. How about Joe Burrow?
I love Joe Burrow. I think of him as – right now I think of him as a better pro prospect than Tua. Tua's a winner. And he's done some nice things, but I think he's overrated with the weapons that he has, being at Alabama where things are easy. Again, I'm not trying to take away anything away, but I would pick Burrow over Tua if they both are healthy and hitting in all cylinders. Danny, I think he has some moxie about him. Just because the quarterback, the coach, and the coordinator and the head coach say we can start passing doesn't mean that you can just go light it up. Yeah, he deserves to be a record breaker at LSU because he's not an average player. He's a winner. I really love the way he plays. I think it's going to be hard to beat Alabama because they're at home, and Nick Saban just knows how to win these kind of games. But I tell you, it's not too big for Burrow to go out and win the game. They're not going to have a problem with quarterback. He is really good. I love what he does.
Stan, always great. Enjoy your day down in Austin. We haven't checked. Is it a nice day down there, too?
Yeah, yesterday was cloudy and surprising. It was warmer in Kansas City and Manhattan when I left and when I landed in Texas. And I said, what is going on? But no, it's great to travel to Texas in November. Give me Ames, Iowa in September. Give me Manhattan, Kansas in October. And give me Texas in November. Beautiful. Just about 70-some degrees today.
All right.
Perfect football weather. Not a cloud in the sky. Danny, it looks like college game days normally look.
All right.
Beautiful.
That is super. And you can hear the Stan on the call at 2:30 in the Kansas State Network. And Brad Porter is coming up next with your Sports Saturday as we are kicking off a college football Saturday with lots of good action locally and nationally, and we hope you got ready for it here on College Football Game Day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Ball Game Day.